Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. And, of course, we have to go back out to the country to get our friend, the goddess of grains, Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Citizen Elevator. And, of course, there's a lot going on in the agricultural market, so we got to get the scoop from the number one person. Angie, what's up?
Oh, not much. Just living the dream, trying to get my hands around all that's going on in the world today. So it's a lot of fun.
And in your mind, what is going on in the world today?
Oh, goodness. Well, I mean, we had the meeting between Trump and the Chinese president last week, and from the sounds of it, that was actually went better than anticipated. I mean, for me, and we had talked about this several times before, going into the election and even after, my biggest concern was we'd get into, you know, this pissing match with China over trade and currency manipulation and things of that nature. So obviously, after yesterday's announcements or Wednesday's announcements there with the that China is not a currency manipulator and that we need them to help us with North Korea and this, that, the other thing. Obviously, the meeting, you know, not only went reasonably well, I would say, but it actually, some of the things that I think we were concerned about going into this, you know, of course, have now been erased. And then the interesting twist, of course, is Trump saying that he likes low interest rates and a weaker dollar. So that, of course, a weak dollar, low interest rates, things of that nature should really encourage people to kind of roll into commodities. And so that's what we're waiting to see if that's going to happen or not. And then, of course, you just have your general seasonal. You know, we're just getting ready to head into planting season and see what Mother Nature is going to do for us. So it's a whole boatload of things to be watching at this point.
Well, all right. So let's look at one thing at a time. What if they? I mean, China is a currency manipulator, as is the United States, as is any other fiat currency. So we already know that.
But
what difference is it? What difference does it really make? I mean, is there too much grain in the world that we're never going to sell ours? I mean, what does it explain to me and everybody what it really means when it comes down to it? Because it just doesn't, you know, again, I don't know that there's, you know, enough, you know, out there regardless. And I mean, we're going to sell ours at whatever we're going to sell it at, and it's going to get taken care of, I think. So why is it such a big deal to, you know, your end of the business?
It's one of those things that, you know, your commodity trader one rule of thumb is a strong dollar means weaker currency. So it just is a headwind that we would have over top of the market in general. And not to mention the fact that right now going into Brazil's important production part here, they've just managed to produce a monster soybean crop. And it looks like they're going to produce a pretty hellaciously large second crop corn crop. But we'll see how that works because they're just going into pollination there. So they've got a long way to go. But the main thing was with China, the concern that we had over labeling China as a currency manipulator or spitting in their face to a certain extent, or working to just tick them off, was that they import, 25% of our soybeans. Half of our export demand or half of our demand for soybeans, of course, is export demand, and China accounts for a significant portion of that. So we wanted to make sure that we kind of have a nice, good working relationship with China. And to see them, to see us not determine that we're going to try to work with them and we're not going to label them as a currency manipulator and we're not going to say that they're taking advantage of trade loopholes and put tariffs on their goods, all of these things that were floated around during the election. definitely puts my mind at ease. And then with everything else that's going on with Syria, of course, and North Korea and healthcare and tax reform and this, that, and the other thing, the fact of, or the idea that we're going to build this wall along the Mexican border has kind of fallen to the wayside. And we seem to have a much better working relationship with Mexico as well, who is our number one corn customer. So, you know, just to kind of maintain these solid trade relationships that we have has been my number one go-to. And then, of course, the weaker dollar, like I said, commodity trading 101, weak dollar can indicate stronger or the ability to export more. And especially when we're competing against Brazil, who has seemed to turn the corner on their economic shit show, you know, it should help us if our dollar kind of turns weaker and theirs turns stronger, we could be a little bit more competitive globally.
All right, so now we'll start with the currency. So why, you know, a weaker currency is only
help our people.
It's only taking money out of your pocket.
Exactly.
So if you know, again, I understand the relationship, and it doesn't always mean that that's going to be the case. But I guess the question is, you know, every time the Fed gets involved and keeps the dollar weak, which is how they do, the reason they weaken the dollar is so they can, you know, cheapen it so that they can pay back that money they stole a while ago. Okay.
Yeah.
So now, you know, so if we didn't have a weak enough dollar, would China not buy our grains? I mean, will we not sell our grains? Yeah, that's where I always get confused is, you know, would we not sell anymore? Would our farmers be out of business?
We'd still sell.
Okay.
Yeah, we'd still sell. I mean, it's a hard thing. It's a hard position to be in. When you feel like you're cheerleading a lower dollar, because I do. I do feel that way because globally we have a lot of grain, and any little deal that we can come up with to make us more competitive on the global market, yay. You know what I mean? That it's for my customers who are struggling, I love the idea. You know, I went back to 2010 a couple different times. We saw it happen in 2007. Where there really wasn't a story from a supply and demand standpoint, but it was all outside economic factors, and we saw a rally develop because of it. And so for me to sit here and have to work with a farmer every day, I love any reason that we see that the market should move higher. As a consumer or as anyone that is working in, you know, as a saver, you know, I have savings accounts. I have 401ks, you know, I have all of these things. And so on that side, yeah, it's detrimental to us in that sense. The weaker our dollar is, the less our buying power and the lower interest rates are, the less that we can manage to save. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, the low interest rate world that we live in right now is one so people can afford to finance a freaking mattress for 4 years. I mean, that's where we're at, unfortunately. And so, yeah, a lot of times I find myself feeling somewhat hypocritical or, you know, I have that one half of me that's hoping for one thing and another half that knows we really need another. And that's where I'm at right now with this. And I was really surprised to see him come out and make the comments that he made yesterday or on Wednesday there, just because it just seemed to be so far against what, you know, for one, where our monetary policy had been heading these last several months and against what he had stated throughout much of the election.
No, I agree with you on a lot of it. I'm really more interested in getting, you know, the view from an outsider. I mean, I'm an anti-Fed guy myself. That's just, I become that way over time because, and we'll have to get this when we get back from the break. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We are with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. Make sure you go to BubbaTrading.com and download the show. Excuse me, LibertyTalk.fm and download the show every day. BubbaTrading.com, you can get my brand new hit sensation, Bubba's Bottom Line. And of course, we'll be back right after the break with more from the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator, The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, we're coming right back after the break. Back to to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizen Elevator, as well as the Goddess of Grains at Twitter. Now, all right, so I'm an anti-Fed guy. I believe they've disintegrated the dollar. I believe that from in my lifetime, and I'm a little bit older than you, probably twice, but so I've seen that, you know, in 1985, I bought an Eldorado for $15,000 or whatever it was. That same car today is about $80,000. And, of course, I'm not making six times what I was making in 1985. So, again, to me, the manipulation of the currency does absolutely nothing. And furthermore, I think that actually farmers were making more money then when soybeans were $5 and corn was two and wheat was three. All right. Now, corn is still only three and change, and wheat is barely four, and soybeans are nine, and they're still not making as much money. So, again, I go back to the rigging of the currency and the manipulation of the banks. It doesn't do us any good. But my real question is, because I don't know the answer, and I know you do, is if the dollar is stronger and they have to pay more, are they not going to buy from us? Is there enough world grain to feed the entire world without us?
The perception is yes, but there isn't. No, there's not. The U.S. is still a powerhouse in grain production. Of course, if the U.S. were to be removed from the overall picture and you were to take that our piece of the puzzle out of it, you know, it would be like putting a puzzle together and missing a giant chunk of the corner. I mean, we provide a significant amount of grain into the world, and it would. But what would happen is it would raise the price of grain. And then it would encourage that extra production because there is enough arable land. I mean, there's this idea that there isn't enough land to create more grain. And you know, the reality is Brazil's sitting on a boatload of it that they could bring into production. Are they going to? No. I mean, at this point in time, with their currency strengthening and the amount of grain that they have on hand and the competitive nature that the global market's shaped up into, they are struggling to even make ends meet, just like the U.S. farmer, probably more so than the U.S. farmer because they have other issues that they're dealing with. But from an overall standpoint, no. I mean, would a stronger dollar kind of limit our piece of the pie? Possibly. But from an overall standpoint, no. The world could not survive without U.S. grains. We would at least be forced into or see a type of famine develop for about 5 to 10 years before global production was able to catch up, if it were able to, because population continues to grow.
Right. And if our dollar was stronger, then we'd be actually making more money. So we'd sell less but make more.
We'd find a way to use it domestically. I mean, if our dollar was stronger and we were making more money, and we were seeing the world have to shift other types of production into food production, you know, and maybe redirecting their focus from oil or something of that nature, some other resource that they're putting together, then our other resources would actually have an increased value as well, and our buying power would be greater from a import standpoint. So, I mean, a strong dollar overall is not the worst thing in the world. From, like I said, from a commodity trading standpoint, most folks will tell you a strong dollar is the worst thing you can have, but overall, is it? No. No, it's not.
Right. Well, that's my point. Again, this is where I get irritated. Cause, listen, I talk about the weak dollar. Listen, you know, I am no different than any other guy who looks at it. I mean, I understand the correlation, but I also understand that, you know, we are the dominant factor and could be the dominant factor. And if our dollars were actually worth more, then selling corn at $3.50 if we had a normal dollar that hadn't been so manipulated and so borrowed against and wasn't was worth such garbage, then getting $3.50 for corn would be a bargain. You know,
because your buying power would be so much greater.
That's where I always had the problem. Good, I'm sorry.
No, I agree with you. I your buying power would be improved significantly. I mean, that's the worst thing that you can have as a consumer is a low dollar because it equates to significant inflation. And we're already looking at grocery store prices that aren't, I mean, your only things that have been lower as of late have really been milk, butter. You know what I mean? Your dairy goods, because we have an oversupply of dairy across much of the Midwest. But that's been about the only thing. Your grocery prices increase, your cost of everything increases, and it's not good for the consumer or for the farmer, and overall for the business person. If they need to import or do anything of that nature when we have a weak currency.
Right. So then now if we get into to part two of this argument, the inflation is BS, because we don't have true free markets. They're more manipulated markets, because it's really benchmarked against the currency or against something else. So now if you say, tell the Fed that they can't print any more money, they wouldn't need to create this artificial inflation because why are they creating inflation? So they can pump up the value of your farm so you can pay more taxes on that farm, because they printed all this money and gave it to the banks. So where's the benefit for you and me?
Oh, there's no benefit. I mean, you can easily see what's going on with the tax and spend policies and the increase or the problems that we have with our buying power anymore. I lived in Michigan, or I grew up in Michigan, born and raised, and I got to watch our government gut the manufacturing industry, and then in turn realize 10 years later that it had gutted its revenue source, you know, because we saw manufacturing leave the state in droves. Well, now that agriculture is struggling, I've been the lucky one to move to Iowa, where we now have $100 million budget shortfall because farming revenue has dropped so far, and our government has, you know, everything's gone up in cost, and our government's lost the ability to manage revenue. And a lot of folks will think, oh, you're a red state, so you're taxing, you know, you're taxable. Your tax levels must be low, blah, blah, blah. No, actually, Iowa was one of the more poorer states to do business in, which is shocking to me when I discovered that. But that's been our problem is the cost of doing things continues to increase. And unfortunately, the pace of revenue cannot keep up. And that's where we're sitting right now is they're trying to figure out which education programs they're going to gut, and which Medicaid programs they're going to gut, and all of these things, because they cannot keep up and manage the state's economy as it is.
And of course, that's my point, that it's really artificial, because nobody is really making any more money than they were making before. In fact, I would say that they're making less money. And that becomes the bigger problem, because unfortunately, the cost of getting those goods out of the ground, the tractors haven't come down in value. Nothing else has come down in value, but yet they keep pushing up for inflation. But the things we use every day have inflated quite a bit. So where does the equal balance come in?
I honestly can't tell you, because that's the thing, is the tractors haven't dropped in value. The health insurance, the cost of these farmers trying to make sure they're insuring their families has gone up significantly. Everything for a farmer at this point, you mentioned the prices being back to where they were. Corn, of course, has found a new higher level. The market seems to be about a buck higher than where it was when I started trading here 14 years ago or so. But the costs associated with growing a crop have grown exponentially. And so the farmer is not making more money when all is said and done. If he's being honest with himself, he's actually making significantly less. And it's a struggle, and he's not the only one. I mean, that's from an overall standpoint as a consumer, I would venture that, you know, it used to be that a $40,000 a year job was you were set.
You're in poverty. We're going to have to get back on this when we come back from the break. This is The Goddess Herself, Angie Setzer, Goddess of Grains at Twitter. By the way, I'm at Bubba Trading at Twitter, if anybody wants to follow me, Bubba_trading, you know, in case you decide that maybe you'd like to hear what I have to say. But anyways, get download the show every day, libertytalk.fm. You can download The Bubba Show every day. And, of course, The Sporting Edge on the weekends, which is now hosted by Xander and crew, which show is growing leaps and bounds. Make sure you check it out. And also go to BubbaTrading.com. We've got a new hedging course starting in the next couple of weeks. Make sure you get signed up for it. It's really the best. It'll help you make your money last longer and grow wealth. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bob Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and the vice president of grain at Sisters Elevator. All right, Angie. So again, we have, you know, we're both on the same page, but I'm trying to get it to where we can tie this into a bow. But you have, now you started 14 years ago. Was ethanol, right now, I believe that ethanol accounts for about $1.50 in corn value. Is that about right?
Yeah, I would say at least a buck. Yeah, when I started, ethanol was not on the, I mean, it was there. It was, there was conversation of it, but we didn't have the RFS or anything of that nature. So now, you know, when I got rolling, most guys were, I had to call people and ask them what they would sell their corn for. And most of them told me, you give me 2 1/4, I'll sell it all to you. But again, like I said, their cost of living at that point in time were substantially lower.
Well, let's think about what they were. I mean, you know, I gave the example of my car, but gasoline was probably 14 years ago was what, $1 a gallon?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so now you're paying, and for a farmer, that's a big thing. They use a lot of fuel, don't they?
Yeah, they use a lot of fuel. I mean, the cost of gas is a little bit higher 14 years ago because we would have already been into 2001. You know, it was when we started to see gas increase in price, but we hadn't hit that point where we were $4 a gallon yet. That happened after I started working. So, yeah, I mean, you haven't seen diesel fuel drop much below $2 a gallon. I can't tell you. I think last spring, maybe we saw it dip down into that $2 to $2.50 or so, gasoline down to $1.80. That's been about as cheap as it's gotten. I mean, your cost of energy has been substantially increased. Your healthcare costs have gone up dramatically. What else do you got?
How about your education? Wait. I'm just finishing with two kids in college at about $100,000 a year. Okay, so between the two of them, it's going to be $400,000. And you're just starting your college. The way we're going, you might need $1 million to send your kids to college. Okay. So,
oh gosh. Yeah.
Well, but I mean that's the point. See, the issue here becomes we have nothing going for us in favor because as long as we allow the government to manipulate the currency and keep the dollar weak, and as long as we don't have free markets, which we don't have anymore. I mean, the only true free market left, in my opinion, I mean, I'm sure there's more than a couple, but is in a major product is a house or land. Because that is got nobody's control. You know, I own it. You want to buy it? Well, we're going to either have a price discovery and meet and sell it, or we're not going to do anything. But everything else is kind of manipulated.
I mean, it's you could say the same for cash grain, cash cattle, you know, things of that nature where, you know, because I'm on the physical side, I'm on the cash side. And the futures can do whatever they want, but the reality is basis, you know, the difference between the cash price and the futures, the cash price that we pay to the farmer or the end user pays, can be whatever the market dictates, you know, based on your local supply and demand. That's the only thing. I mean, that's very similar to your real estate and things of that nature is your value is only worth what your buyer will pay, you know, and what your seller is willing to give it up for, kind of deal. But yeah, there's very limited free market access out there, I would say.
So, I mean, we've got everybody manipulating. I mean, listen, the original manipulator was Ben Bernanke. That was the big thing when in his whole QE program. So all of the money that they want to print, and the only reason Donald Trump wants to keep money cheap is because he wants to get these programs done at cheap interest rates. All right. You know, that's his thing. But the truth of the matter is that interest rates should not be controlled by anybody. They should be developed by on supply and demand, like everything else is worked on. I mean, and that's where we've missed out. And so that's where we have all this artificial wealth. But the problem is that the artificial wealth doesn't go to the normal person. It goes only back to the wealthy. So it makes the wealthier richer, and it keeps the middle class either getting poorer or not advancing. So now what do we have? Yeah. We have a community that, you know, farmers, you know, they make good money, you know, if they're doing a good job and they're not blowing their brains out doing too many other things. All right. But, you know, if they're just doing their job, they're making money. But they're not making as much. Their costs are going higher. And then, you know, now we've got everything so fine tuned that, you know, 30 years ago, you know, they didn't know what the hell was going on half the time. It didn't matter. But now, you know, everybody's down to a science, and you're now competing against corporations because they can figure out they can get a return. So they overpay for the property. They undersell the goods and they stick it to the farmer. So how do we overcome all that?
I don't know how you fix it. I mean, our biggest problem right now is you have a whole sector of society. And I brought it up earlier, and I'm going to say it again, because it absolutely blows my mind. The other day on TV, you know, there's a commercial, interest-free financing on a mattress for 4 years, you know, so you have this whole group of society that thinks it's better for them because of this cheap interest and this, that, and the other thing. And the reality is it isn't at all, you know, and for the farmer, it's the same thing. I mean, the problem that you have is right now land values, I would venture, for farmland actually are inflated probably relatively substantially. From a farmer standpoint, that will help if he owns his ground and he or she owns their ground and they have to put a P&L statement together and show that, you know, what they have equity in. I mean, that's beneficial to them. If they owe nothing on the ground and are able to show they have $7,000 or $8,000 in equity on the land, that's super. But again, it goes back to it's only worth what you can get a buyer to pay. You can say it's worth $8,000, but if no one's coming in to buy. Now with the lower interest, you know, our biggest struggle that we have in Michigan right now is it's not farmers that are buying the land that comes up for sale. It's investment groups. And then they turn around and allow, quote unquote, allow the farmer to rent the ground from them, with flex lease policies and things of that nature. And we're now discovering that the farmer is not getting ahead in any of those. Cause if the market rallies with some of these leases, if the market, you know, as a farmer, we always tell them to sell at the cost of production. So when they get started with these investment groups, their rent is X based on 394 December corn futures. Their rent is a certain price. So they can sit and say, okay, at 425, I'm going to sell because I'm making money. Well, if something happens production-wise and the market continues to rally and we hit, for let's say $5 or something of that nature in corn, their rent suddenly goes up by a multiplying factor. So I have farmers now that are trying to figure out how to protect themselves to the upside when in theory they shouldn't have to, but the land that they're farming is owned by a corporation that has a, you know, $300,000 a year or more CPA sitting back figuring out ways that they can benefit greater if the value of the crop goes up. You know, so it's scary in a sense that we would see these corporations coming in and buying this ground simply because it makes you wonder, you know, where are we going to end up? You know, are you going to see a continuation of this pattern? And if we do, what does this mean for farming in 50 years? So, yeah, I mean, there's a whole screwed up part of the farming sector and the economic sector overall that's benefited or grown from cheaper free interest rates and you know, policies that help the rich continue to get richer.
And it's not, and by the way, just we'll clarify one other thing. The cheap interest rates that you're supposedly out there, you know, for the big corporations, yes, they are cheap because they can borrow because the banks are willing to give them. The banks are willing to give you nothing for the smaller guy. And all these deals, like the mattress deal you're talking about or the 0% on, on cars, that's really not 0%. Did you realize that on a car, 0% equates to about 8%? Did you know that?
That's crazy. No, I didn't know
that. Well, that's because you get none of the value behind it. So you get none of the discount. You're basically just paying full value for the car, which works out to be about 8%. Same thing on a mattress.
Wow.
So you're not getting any of the value. Those are actual numbers. And that's not me. That's not me being pissed off as usual, because I am always pissed off. But that's me saying, hey, this is a fact. This is a mathematical fact that you are not getting a 0%. You're getting a much higher rate. And then, of course, the other 0% stuff that they give you, you know, for 90 days same as cash, remember that, or no interest for a year.
Yeah.
Well, you know what happens if you don't pay on time on those types of notes, you know what happens, right? They revert back to day one at 24% interest. So now you went from no interest to usury rates, and who can afford that?
That's the only people that benefit from those types of things, at least in my sense, my opinion, I am the bank's, I am not a bank's friend. You know, if they're looking to catch your interest on me, they're not going to, because that may take, you know, I love the 6 months interest free at Menards.
Right.
They offer that. I pay it off in two. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where it may just be, well, I don't want to cash strap myself right now. You know, I'll pay half this time, half next month, and we'll be done kind of deal. You know, the same for us with our house payment, but we're an anomaly. You know what I mean? I understand that most people, if they're going to finance something for 48 months, their last payment's probably going to come on month 48. And that is a real, because they don't realize it, or it's going to come on month 62 because they figure they can, and then they wonder why they can't get ahead. You know, same thing with credit cards.
It's always the same. We gotta go to break. This is the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the vice president of Granite Sales and Matter. This is Todd Bubba Horowitz. Of course, make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every single day, as well as The Sporting Edge on the weekends, now hosted by Xander. That's my son, by the way. And we're going to step out here for a break. BubbaTrading.com gets you the brand new hit sensation, soon to be Emmy Award-winning Bubba's Bottom Line podcast. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and as we decide the economy's fate, and I'm with Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Systems Elevator, as well as the goddess of grains on Twitter. All right, Angie. So, you know, obviously we've solved a lot of the problems of the world, but what the hell's going on in these cattle markets? I say I'm calling BS on all this. I think there's some kind of squeeze going on. I heard the other day that some packers were trying to buy big, you know, and they never call, right? Yeah. They're waiting for you to come and beg to them to buy, and I hear they're buying now too. So I think there's a big squeeze going on. I think somebody got caught short pretty bigger. What do you think?
Yeah, there's something going on in that market right now, because that's what last week we saw there were no trades. So you have this internet sale set up now, and then you have your superior cattle auctions, and you know there's these things out there that you can really pay attention to cash cattle, and it goes back to what we were just talking about, where cash is king. You know, what is going on, it doesn't matter what the futures market's doing, what the cash market is doing is the thing that really matters to me the most, because that tells me where the market should head in terms of direction. Well, 2-3 weeks ago we saw some spots get up, you know, especially in the northern plains where there were issues, you know, where you saw cash cattle hit 215, you know, in the southern areas where there's more plentiful supplies and maybe a more limited amount of packers, you just saw them in the 130s plus. So you saw cash cattle up to what would be considered the highest level seen in almost a year. The packer tends to, when you see that happen, tends to back completely away from the market and attempt to reset. You know, the quickest way to scare your seller is to no longer want to buy. And, you know, that's an old ADM trick that we've seen here in the grain side of things, where if farmers didn't want to sell their grain, ADM was notorious for widening their basis. So, oh, you're not going to sell, as opposed to strengthening the bid that they would offer, they would weaken it. And it would scare the shit out of farmers. And next thing you know, everyone would bring their grain to the yard thinking that they'd missed out on opportunity. So cash guys had backed away. Packers had backed away from the market. And there was no trade because everyone thought they were attempting to basically reset the cash market. Well, it didn't work. So this week we're now seeing packer offers at similar levels to what we saw 2 weeks ago. One guy I had talked to had a packer call and say, hey, you know, what would you do? These would be May cattle. And, you know, the thing that's important to remember with cattle is a month can make a huge difference on weight. And, you know, you really can't bring a cattle to market that a cow to market that's or a steer to market that's not ready to be used in market. So a month can make a huge difference. Well, there's stories out there right now of cattlemen being called and say, you know, these are May cattle, blah, blah, blah. We'll pay you the same price that we would a week ago. Yada, yada, yada. Okay. You know, the deal's made. All right. Well, that truck will be there tomorrow. So it's kind of like someone calling you and saying, hey, I'll buy your harvest corn from you. Okay, that sounds great. You know, working out the bid on harvest corn. Well, we'll be there to pick that up. And it's September 1st. You know what I mean? The corn's still in the field kind of deal. So it's pretty interesting to see what's going on that side. And yeah, I would imagine a packer of some sort has been caught wickedly short. The scary part about cattle is it tends to correct really violently. So, you know, we're waiting to see what happens, but the cash market itself right now seems to have found some value. And the question is, you know, do we have a lack of supply? You got to remember when the Southern Plains fire happened, there was an estimated 1 million head lost, that was out on pasture and things like that. So that's a substantial reduction in supply. Feeders seem to have a reasonably strong level of supply, but that market's rallying too, because fats have gained. So it's a really screwy, interesting market right now. I've always been a grain trader, and right now I wish I was a cattle trader just because they've been having a hell of a lot more fun than I have these last few weeks.
Yeah, but you're making money for your clients, which really counts. So we've never talked about this before, but, you know, obviously farmers and people in the industry, they also have to have things to invest in. What are some of the things you do for your personal financing? How do you invest? Where do you invest in for yourself, for your long term?
Me? Uh-huh. Long term, I am, and people will probably laugh at me, but between my husband and I, we own 4 houses. Three of which we rent right now at a reasonable profit. One piece of property I owned prior to even knowing him, I bought 2012 was when I bought it. I actually bought it from a customer of mine who wanted to buy the tillable ground, but the seller would only sell it if they also bought a house on 35 acres. So I have 20 acres of woods, 15 acres of pasture, basically, or with about 17 acres of woods, but in any event. So I own a piece of property just outside of Lansing, Michigan that's gained in value. I have, of course, mainly right now for me, I'm not intensely managing or intensively managing my 401k. My husband is. He loves investment. He trades. He's a crazy person. He'll trade ocean freight. He'll do different things like that. He likes to do that side of things. For me, on the side, you know, I may invest in trading some spreads or something like that. Something that you can gain a few cents for, scalping here and there, that sort of thing. But from an overall standpoint, investment-wise, I think property is going back to what we were talking about, I think property is a great thing to have. Specifically that piece that I have there outside of Lansing, you know, that the urban sprawl, you know, every day that goes by, we're one more day probably closer to someone wanting to put a subdivision there, which I'm not sure if I just want the equity on paper or if I would end up selling eventually. But aside from that, I am somewhat of a hands-off investor person just because I I would rather maintain at this point. I get a little nervous about what we're going to see as we move forward, economically speaking, and with other things that happen. So I'm more of a safe place person where I can maintain and see slow growth, and then occasionally we'll go out and put some trades on that we may regret doing, but are fun to watch.
Well, so you're a hard asset kind of person. You want to have, you know, you're not looking to buy stocks. Yeah. You're more into like real estate. You buy gold too, or?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. I wouldn't have a problem with it. I'm not a buyer of it at this point. Right now, not saying it's not a good market. I just haven't been involved in it enough. And I know that it's seen a substantial gain in value here over the short term. As someone who's not a gold bug, I wouldn't jump in, but we're hard asset people really more than anything, but we're commodity traders. So that's in our blood. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. What do you do for your retirement? What do you do with your retirement? How do you set up for your retirement? You have a 401k or an IRA or?
Yeah. Yeah. Both. I have 401k IRA, I guess. I have both sets and basically I'm lucky. I do the company matching thing. You know, my company will kick in a certain percent. I double what their match is and have it in a relatively slow growth fund. You know, just something that I don't really worry about losing substantially value. You know, if something were to happen tomorrow and the Dow were to all of a sudden implode or, you know, outside stocks were to suddenly run into significant trouble, God forbid, you know, we ran into another 2008 or something like that. You know, mine would maintain the capital that's in it. And you know, really from an overall standpoint for me, I'm 35 years old. So slow growth, I could be more aggressive, but I'm not. Like I said, if I'm going to be aggressive with other investments, it's going to be, you know, buying into a farm back home or something like that.
You don't have to be aggressive. You're doing it perfectly because, again, at your age, you just keep putting away and keep putting away. And look, the markets are going to have another 2008, but at the end of the day, they're going to go up 9% year over year. And that's the way the markets have gone for 120 years. I see no reason there for the change today. And Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Citizen Elevator, and also the goddess of grains, as always, thanks so much for sharing all your stuff with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I always enjoy being on.
Hey, you'll be back. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains. It's just an elevator. Make sure you go to bubbatrading.com and download the show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. Everybody have a great weekend. Have a happy Easter. We appreciate you. Thank you so much. We'll see you on Monday, everybody. Have a great day. Thank you so much. We'll see you later.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.